Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking. Recognized as the best Pan-African bank for SMEs. For tailored solutions and deep sector expertise, search Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking today.
Climate change is no longer an environmental concern. It's a growing economic and financial threat. Floods, droughts, and extreme weather can disrupt food production, destroy infrastructure, and destabilize markets. So what is the Reserve Bank doing to keep the financial system resilient in the face of ongoing climate shocks? I'm in conversation now with the Deputy Governor of the South African Reserve Bank, Fundi Chasibana. Deputy Governor, a very warm welcome. How does the central bank see climate change impacting monetary and financial stability today? It's important that it's addressed in the immediate, not just in the future.
Yes. Thank you, Jeremy, for tackling this topic, often misunderstood, including the role of central banks, because central banks are not climate policymakers. We're not environmental policymakers, but they are spillovers related to climate-related risks, nature-related risks, as we're now calling them. So in South Africa, for example, a severe drought, which generally would occur once in 20 years, can increase food inflation by 10 percentage points and overall inflation by 3 percentage points. And so from a price stability point of view, the central bank naturally, in the course of dealing with monetary policy, will have to contend with what is happening to food prices. If you look at our monetary policy statements in 2024, 2023, we also were talking about adverse weather effects. How would an El Nino weather have an impact on food prices? That's my part. And then on financial stability, we've got to look at this in a layered way. Firstly, is that climate change has got both economic costs and insurance costs. So when you get things like insurance claims following a flood, we saw this in KZN in 2022, that you had an increase in insurance claims. The fiscal costs can also go up when we saw things like damaged bridges. What does it do if this starts to occur at scale? This is something that we've had to do a lot of research to understand and also do analytics to see from previous climate events, what have the implications been? We also have had to have an appreciation on what this means for individual banking institutions. So it's easy for us to see how if you have, say, a house and it's in a street where there is a flood and you lose a half of the property. But what does that do to the books of a bank and the fact that you owe money to the bank and the banks are holding this property as collateral? What does that do to their books? So we've had to understand bad impact as well. So it's been a journey of understanding, Jeremy, but this year in particular, we've had to do a climate stress test on the financial system as a whole to say, if we were to have significant climate events, would our financial institutions be able to respond and would they be able to remain resilient?
So, Deputy Governor, you paint a very concerning picture. And against that backdrop, then, should the SARB be doing more to explicitly incorporate climate risk into your current inflation and interest rate modeling?
So we already are, Jeremy, but it's a learning journey. So you have to be humble as a central banker, because what is different about climate change is that it is different to the type of economic events we are used to seeing. So when you draw up an econometric model, you normally expect to have a single event, it occurs, and you call that a shock, and then you get an outcome. Climate-related risks can take place in an asymmetric way, and they can be multifaceted. So just from a modeling point of view, we've had to learn, we've had to refine, we've had to have more dynamic modeling settings to recognize this multifaceted nature, that when you get climate events, they might not just be about food prices, they might be about insurance prices, they might also place pressure on financial institutions and affect the rate of lending and borrowing. All of this happening at the same time means we have to think about modeling very differently, and this work is still underway inside our own central bank. And it's work that is being done by peer central banks, which is why we've had to also engage at an international level, either through the Financial Stability Board or membership of the Network for Greening the Financial System, so that we're learning from what other central banks are doing as well.
Of course, it's not just your problem, and there's always the risk that climate inaction by government creates financial instability that monetary policy alone cannot fix.
Agreed, sir. So as I said at the beginning, you need to think about the central bank's work in the context of what government climate policy is. And I think in the space of government climate policy, what we've endeavored to do is to plug into other interactions within government. So South Africa as a country, I would say in terms of climate work and climate policy, we have been forward thinking in the work, but the decisions in climate policy have not been easy because the trade-offs are not easy to define. So the National Treasury has been discussing the carbon tax for some time. We've been engaged at the international level on what does just transition mean. And some of the issues are a lot more slow grinding, Jeremy, because we have to reflect as a country on what do we do, for example, on the back of a flooding event. How do we repair the roads stronger and better? And that's a budgeting issue that the Treasury has to grapple with. How do we think about climate budgets for particular industry, emissions level, the air quality responsibilities sit elsewhere? So there's an element of coordination that is important. What has been encouraging for us is that we now have this Presidential Climate Commission. So this coordination level is very important because the danger, if we just think as central banks and you have the financial sector going it alone, and identifying areas of climate risk and deciding on their own they're going to focus on net zero, is you might end up with certain financing gaps for certain industries.
And
for growth to be sustainable, you want to make sure that you go through this transition phase, and there's a nuance in transitioning.
And just a final one, and in conclusion, do you have a view, does the SARB have a view on the idea that climate-related financial risks, given what you've just told me and the importance thereof, should be explicitly priced now into capital requirements and lending costs?
We're not ready to price, Jeremy. Before you can price, you need to have the data. The data must be accurate. The data currently does not sit with financial institutions. The data sits with the customers of financial institutions. So step one that we've had to do is we've said to financial institutions, go and have conversations with your clients, understand what risks your clients face. Because if you're lending to a mine, a coal miner, you need to know that coal mining is a dirty industry. What is going to be your relationship with that entity? Are you going to phase out lending? And how is that client itself going to transition? Does it mean that you're going to lose the deposit base from that client? Does it mean that that client is going to be able to pay you over time? So it is a journey. We are in conversation. There's some reports that we've published as the SARB on what we've discovered on where financial institutions are in this conversation. And we'll continue to do that because it must be an ongoing interaction. I hope that helps.
It does, and as you say, a very important conversation. Thank you for joining us. That's the Deputy Governor of the South African Reserve Bank, Fundi Chasibana. I appreciate your time.
Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking.